Meeting will come to order. Members, please take your seats. We don't have a quorum quite yet, but when we have one, we will approve the minutes. Today, we have a fairly long agenda, but I hope to move right along. We're going kind of like an early lightning round here. 5-7 minutes of presentation would be nice. We have several bills and a couple of more informal requests and one discussion item. And we do have session today at 4:30, so we will be getting out of here on time today. Starting out, I don't see Representative Gunther here. Is he here? No, he's not. For those who are wondering what the schedule may be, Representative Gunther has another committee meeting, so if he shows up when he does, we will insert him before whoever thinks that they're next. So we start out with House File 651, Sal Lake, Representative Hancock. I should say that these bills will be laid over for possible inclusion. Do we have a page around here somewhere? Yes, our youngest page. Getting your work done. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hancock.
You may proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. Dave Hancock, it's my privilege today to introduce to you what I think is one of the most pristine lake areas in Minnesota. It is Lake LaSalle. It's located in Hubbard County, not far from Itasca Park. Actually, it's a little bit north and east, and it actually sort of parallels the Mississippi as it flows north into Bemidji. It is a very pristine area. The lake itself is about 200 feet deep, or a little over 200 feet deep. They say it's the second deepest lake in Minnesota. It's surrounded by very good stands of both coniferous and deciduous forests. It's some beautiful hillsides, and I think it is just what the legacy funds were intended to do. It is an area that we would like to acquire and establish as the Lake LaSalle State Recreation Area, and I think it would complement Lake Itasca in terms of its ability to provide great recreational opportunity for not only ourselves but future generations. I have with me today Bob McGillivray from the Trust for Public Land and Katie Magozzi from the Park Rapids Chamber of Commerce, who would like to speak in support of this project. And then we can take any questions if that would be fine with you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hancock. I don't know which one's going first, but introduce yourself again, please, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob McGillivray with the Trust for Public Land, and thank you so much for this opportunity to share information about...
Mr. McGillivray, that's why I'm going to say this. Would you spell it, please?
M-C, capital G... I-L-L-I-V-R-A-Y.
McGillivray.
That's correct.
See, I can read.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proceed, please.
And thank you for this opportunity to share information about the LaSalle Lake property, which is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to protect one of Minnesota's most unique resources. This is nearly 1,000 acres of intact land near the headwaters of the Mississippi River in Hubbard County. It's approximately 8 miles northeast of Itasca State Park. Contains all of the shoreline of the state's second deepest lake, over half a mile of Mississippi River headwaters, over half a mile of a cold water stream. It's got high-quality forests and wetlands. The County Biological Survey studied it and ranked it as having outstanding biodiversity significance. It's got great connectivity between public hunting lands that really allows wildlife a large area in which to roam. The hunting opportunities are fantastic. It's great deer hunting, great grouse hunting. There's also fabulous fishing opportunities. The lake regularly produces very large walleyes in addition to other fish. And also this LaSalle Creek is a cold water stream, portions of which are designated trout waters. The hunting and fishing habitat is so good that the Lessard Council ranked this as the number two project overall out of all the submissions that were presented this year. There's also a small campground at the north end of the property, which is a turnkey operation that for almost no investment would allow people to enjoy this recreational area. I should say on the handout that you've received, the front page is a map so you can see where LaSalle is within the state. And on the second page, you'll see an aerial photograph so you can see the entire shoreline of the lake and the Mississippi River in the upper left-hand corner of the map. This property until recently was listed for sale. It's owned by two developers. The DNR has been interested in this property for many years and asked the Trust for Public Land if we could assist them in acquiring it. This property is the northwest region of the DNR's number one priority. You can see some information that the DNR has put together about this property on the next several pages of this handout that we've given you. We, working together with the DNR, began negotiating with the landowners, and ultimately we were able to obtain an option to purchase the property. The purchase price is the appraised fair market value of the property. We had the property appraised, and the appraisal was submitted to the DNR and run through the statutory review process, and it was certified and approved by the DNR. We have a lot of very strong local support for this project. If you turn to the fifth page of the handout in the upper right-hand corner, you can see some of the entities that we have letters of support from. The Hubbard County Board unanimously approved this acquisition. The Park Rapids Area Chamber of Commerce supports this. Minnesota Deer Hunters, Trout Unlimited, the Hubbard County Coalition of Lake Associations, Audubon, and a number of other organizations that you see listed there. We also have, if anyone is interested in seeing them, a packet of actual letters of support that we have obtained from these organizations. If anybody is interested in them, we do have that information available. The funding for this project is on the back page of the handout. Because of the size of this project and the different resource values involved, we have sought to fund it with three different sources, and you see them listed on this last page of the handout. The first portion would be funded through, as recommended by the LCCMR, out of the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, and there has been a recommendation for $2 million of funding from there. $10,000 of that would go for acquisition costs to the DNR and initial setup. There also was a recommendation from the Lessard Council for $4,632,000. $85,000 of that would go towards restoration, maintenance, and initial improvements in DNR acquisition costs. And then, as you see reflected in the bill in front of you, from the Parks and Trails Fund, we're seeking $2.1 million to fund the balance of this acquisition, and $147,000 of that would go for initial site setup and development, and for the DNR cost for initial maintenance. If you look at the footnotes on this funding chart, it explains a number of these things. But the grand total is $8,490,000. We have an option to acquire the property that runs through the end of this calendar year. The landowners have also been very insistent that they will not sell a portion of this because they own the entire lake and they're not willing to break it up. They either want to sell all of the lake, or they're not willing to sell any of it. And with that, I would turn it over to Katie Magozzi to say a few comments from the chamber, if it pleases Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. Magozzi?
Thank you. Do you want me to spell my name? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Please spell your name for the record.
M-A-G-O-Z-Z-I. That's Italian. Anyway, I'm the director of the Park Rapids Lake.
Is it Norwegian?
Yeah. There are other nationalities in our state. I'm the executive director of the Park Rapids Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce, and I moved up to Park Rapids 10 years ago from Minneapolis, actually, after my children were grown, to enjoy the pristine beauty of the area, and it probably extended my life. Just to have that extremely beautiful place to live. Itasca Park has been a partner with the Park Rapids Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce since its inception at the turn of the century. Highway 71, which is now was the Jefferson Highway, was built to go through Park Rapids because of the importance of Itasca State Park. Itasca State Park came to me and the DNR talked to me about the acquisition of this incredibly important asset to our state, which is the LaSalle property. As lakes are continually under stress, as resorts are sold off, we would lose some of the economic value of our area in terms of the hospitality industry. These assets, a Lake LaSalle, for perpetuity to be set aside for public enjoyment and partnership with the chamber, because we're the marketing entity for these attractions to the world, as well as to have a partner with the DNR to help manage that, well, however they decide to manage it, whether it's public or private, but it'll probably be a partnership. The important thing is that this resource is not lost to the public. It's a treasure. That's why I came down here in a snowstorm to talk to you about that. That's how important our 400 businesses think things like this are. Quality of place is why they come, why you would come to our Park Rapids Lakes area to visit. Don't you think? I have some 400 lakes within 25 miles of Park Rapids. They're all filled with resorts and campgrounds, and that's wonderful. People want things to do, things to see. A treasure, an undeveloped piece of property is a treasure. And to actually have access to it, to be set in perpetuity for the public, is an incredible legacy for our state. That's why we live in this climate, so that we and treasure our lakes and our pristine wilderness. To preserve them, to assume that they're not going to go away, is foolhardy. That's exactly what the voters of the state of Minnesota voted for when they okayed the legacy amendment. This kind of thing. I think it's a perfect fit. And it's a great partnership between public and private. That's why the chamber's at this table, representing business. We value this. Do you have any questions of me?
Excuse me, I was getting all nostalgic here.
Well, I could make you cry.
There's a place called Greenleaf that's just, I thought you were describing that for a while.
Well, right, the call of the loon over the lake, the smell of fresh fish on a grill, sitting with your kids over a campfire. That could disappear if we don't treasure these places. That's what the people of Minnesota asked for, and I think we have a responsibility to give it to them. That's what the legacy funds were for. LaSalle is a jewel, a total jewel.
Thank you. And
you're very welcome.
I was joking a little bit, but I actually, a few years ago, did establish a state park at a place called Greenleaf, and then we had to transition into a state recreation area, so I'm kind of up on establishing state recreation areas. And some of the words you use to describe it, yours is much more pristine than what I have south of Litchfield.
But it's accessible to those people, and that's wonderful that you did that.
Well,
wonderful.
That is our hope. So right. I do have sympathy for doing these types of things. Questions? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Don't shed any tears over this.
Over Greenleaf, I will not shed any tears. Thank you, folks, for coming today. I'm not sure who this question should be directed to, so I'll direct it to you as a general question. Could you describe in more detail the appraisal of this project?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ulibe.
I'd be happy to do that. Representative Torkelson, this property was appraised by a well-qualified appraiser that's been appraising properties for many entities, including the DNR, for over 25 years. That appraisal was submitted to the DNR to be reviewed and run through a statutorily required review process. They hire another outside appraiser to review the appraisal, make sure the assumptions are correct, look at the comparable sales contained in the appraisal, and make sure that they're similar to what is being compared and that the adjustments are appropriate. And basically, look at the entire appraisal and make sure it's appropriate. And once it's approved there, then that was submitted further to DNR, Lands and Minerals staff, and ultimately certified by the DNR. And so this is the statutorily required appraisal process, and that is the process through which this appraisal went.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when did the appraisal occur, and what was the appraised value?
Mr. Gillibrand.
Appraisal occurred last, I believe it was June, and the appraised value was $8,490,000.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you, I don't know if the plans have been made for the campground, or I guess it's campground area that's on the northwest corner of the lake. Could you describe that a little more in detail, and I don't know if plans have been made as to how that might be operated or managed in the future, but could you at least lay out the possibilities?
There is a...
Mr. McGillivray.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Torkelson. There is a small campground, approximately 40 sites, at the northeast corner of the property, close to the road. It's not right on the lake. It's off the lake a little ways. The... land could be managed by the DNR, as it does with some other rec areas and parks, or another possibility that has been discussed is that the running of that campground could be concessioned out to a private vendor, much in the same way that a number of facilities are handled at Itasca State Park, which of course is very close by here. I should also say that the general management of this property would be out of Itasca State Park, so it's not envisioned that there would be any significant new overhead, administrative, or management costs that would go along with this, as it would be managed out of Itasca State Park.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more question. As far as the campground area goes, is there anything in the agreement that would restrict the future sale of that campground or restrict private operation of that campground?
Mr. McGillivray.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, the acquiring the property, there would be no restrictions on the use of the property whatsoever. However, given the funding sources that would be going into this property, there would be certain state-imposed restrictions on the property, which are statutorily required deed restrictions.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McGillivray, do I understand that the DNR has given their stamp of approval?
Mr. McGillivray.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, yes, this is the DNR wants this. It is the Northwest Region's number one priority. I've discussed it thoroughly and many times with senior management of DNR, and yes, this is something that they want very much.
Okay. Representative Keel?
Representative Murphy? Oh,
yes.
I don't mean to take you
Representative
away
Keel.
From, but yesterday you brought before us the Parks and Trails Bill. Was there $2 million in reserve in that bill? I don't seem to remember that.
I didn't bring it with me.
Okay. There was an appeal?
No, there wasn't, okay, that I recall.
And I understand that this is a gem. And there's almost $2 million from LCMR in here. Have they given their approval? Is this on the LCMR's list? of funding that's going to come before Environment Committee?
Mr. McGilvery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, yes, it has been recommended by the LCCMR for $2 million in funding, and that amount is included for this project in the LCCMR that is now proceeding through the legislature.
And, Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker nod? Is the $4,547,000 in the appropriations that was in the bill that came before this committee earlier in the session?
Mr. Becker?
Representative Murphy, yes, it is.
Yes.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Bill Becker, the Sard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, it's a lake and land around the lake. How come the Clean Water Fund missed out on their opportunity?
You asking anyone in particular?
I guess not, Mr. Chair. I don't understand how this can be paid for if we recommend that it should be included. Because then would we be displacing some of the Parks and Trails money that is in Representative Keel's bill?
Representative Murphy, members, what's going to happen to this bill is it will be changes will be made to it in the Environment Committee. I think some of your concerns are going to be addressed there.
Thank you.
Anything else? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wondered, and I apologize, on this sheet here we have $1,953,000, and the request is for $2.1 million. I'm just missing where the difference is going, or.
Mr. McGilvery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, that money would be for the initial improvements of the campground to bring it up to state standards, primarily so that it would be ADA compatible.
Are those improvements not covered by the $920,000 that's in the footnote?
No, it's supposed to be out.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. McGilvery.
Representative Green, the 920 is the value of the improvements that are on the property, the campground. There are several cabins and several other buildings on the property. That is the value of those buildings. However, right now, because they are not owned by the state, it is my understanding that there are different laws pertaining to them in terms of how accessible they need to be for people with disabilities, for example. So there would need to be a few changes made in them. So, for example, that people in wheelchairs would be able to access at least some of those facilities, as would be the case, you know, with any public facilities. And so that money would be going for the initial setup of this, getting it ready for the public, and basically getting it fully ready to be used by the public.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, excuse my voice. I'm trying to save it for tomorrow in state government finance.
Just hold up a second. I'm getting some advice over here. Come right back. Unless you just want to talk for a while about anything else.
No, I'll wait till I have your full attention, Mr. Chair.
Just a second. All right. Members, okay, I wondered about this at the start of the meeting, and I now have clarification. We are going to vote to pass this bill and re-refer it to energy and environment. So it'll go there. Representative Winkler.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We are going to be passing a bill appropriating legacy funds. And yesterday we had a bill that had legacy funds for the Park and Trail Fund. So is that going to be reduced then in order to accommodate this appropriation that we're passing?
Representative Winkler, between here and environment, whatever changes need to be made to, I hope, address whatever concerns you have will be made. I hope.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would hope that at least there would be something that comes back to the Legacy Committee Division, Legacy Division, because right now, by passing this $2.1 million appropriation out of Parks and Trails Fund, we are limiting our, you know, we're taking money out of the fund, which before we've even taken action on the omnibus bill. So I hope that reconciliation at least results in, you know, full disclosure of information.
More new news. This amount is budgeted in the amount that the DNR has in Representative Keel's bill, and we are to lay it over today. So we're back to where we started. But now you know where it is.
Well, we'll save questions for later since we're laying this over then.
All right. Okay, I think that's it, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members.
I will move that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Gunther. Representative Gunther, moving right along.
Afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. I believe I moved this for possible inclusion in your bill, so if somebody would move that, I would be very happy.
Representative McFarland.
Yes, I will move the bill. Representative Gunther's bill number, House File 792.
Thank you very much. To be laid over for possible inclusion. All right. Representative Gunther, welcome to the committee.
We're going to be introduced to the wonderful thing of the Watt Line in Watonwan County. It connects with three other short areas of bike trail in Watonwan County and connects them all. And with that, I would like to have the Watonwan County engineer give us a full vetting of this project.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and fellow representatives. My name is Roger Risser. I'm the Watonwan County engineer, as Mr. Gunther indicated.
Would you spell your last name, please?
R-I-S-S-E-R.
Thank you.
And you should be receiving two handouts. One has a county highway map, and I'll brief from that first, if you will. The Watt Line Trail is a proposed nine-mile trail from Ormsby to St. James, Minnesota, proposed to be built on an abandoned railroad grade. Currently, the land is owned by the DNR as a wildlife management area, but there is legislation, I believe, to direct that sale of that wildlife management area to Watonwan County for purposes of trail construction, and then to maintain it as a wildlife management area in perpetuity, only county managed, not DNR managed. So looking at that first handout, the project is split into two stages, and the reason we did that is we had put together applications to our area transportation partnership for funding through transportation enhancement funds, federal transportation enhancement funds. So stage one extends from Long Lake Park to St. James, and stage two then extends from Ormsby to Long Lake Park. If you turn to page two of that first handout, you'll see an aerial photo, which is a little more shows you a little more detail of the landscape than that the trail would traverse. Again, on this abandoned rail line that parallels Highway 4 from Ormsby to St. James. And at the top, you can see that it would be proposed to connect with the St. James Trail, which circles around St. James Lake, which was built in 2006. The rest of the paperwork in the first handout is basically the details of the application that went forward to the Area Transportation Partnership for funding for stage one of the Wattline Trail. And we have a cost breakdown on page two of the application. And the good news is the Area Transportation Partnership has agreed to fund 80% of the construction cost for stage one, but construction cost exclusively, and no funding for the right-of-way to be acquired from the DNR. So basically, the amount that the Area Transportation Partnership would be funding is $284,000 out of this $550,000 cost estimate for stage one. The rest of the first handout is the justification for the project. I won't go into too many details, but basically, a trail is the highest and best use for that abandoned railroad right-of-way. It is a very marginal wildlife management area for hunting. It's a narrow 100-foot right-of-way adjacent to State Highway 4 right-of-way. And yes, there are some hunters, and the DNR's language in their legislation would require that we maintain it in perpetuity as a wildlife management area. So we're looking at coexisting of hunting and trail operation as well. And that's been done elsewhere in the state, so we don't think that will be a big issue. I would like to go on to the second handout then, which is a PowerPoint presentation. Sorry I couldn't bring that along today. But this gives a little more background on the trail. At the bottom, the second slide on the first page basically shows the Wattline Trail and how it connects up with other trails in Watonwan County or their location. And the green boxes indicate completed trails. The Hammond Highway Trail, completed in the early 90s. The St. James Trail, which I previously mentioned, completed in 2006, goes around St. James Lake. And the recently completed Butterfield Lake Trail, which was just completed and opened last summer, going around Butterfield Lake in Butterfield, Minnesota. So this map does show some linkages to other trails, but if you turn to the page two on the first slide there, it gives you a better picture, visual image of how it connects to other regional trails in the area. The Hammond Highway Trail, they're ending in Medelia. There's been an initiative to connect that ultimately with the Red Jacket Trail west of Mankato. I think it extends to Rapidan now. Also, south of Ormsby, there's been an initiative to extend a trail, or at least segments, down to Sherburn on the same abandoned railroad grade that there's efforts by Martin County, I believe, to acquire lands and build a trail there. Also, there was a recently or soon-to-be-completed trail around Mountain Lake in Mountain Lake, Minnesota, that people are exploring options to possibly connect up with that trail. So this trail would have a lot of connectivity, as Representative Gunther previously mentioned. Page three of the handout shows some typical sections of the existing railroad embankment. Basically, you can see that it's very well suited for trail construction. Very little clearing and grubbing would be needed. Basically, you put a dozer out there, blade off the topsoil, put down some gravel and pavement, and you're ready to have a trail. We do have two water courses to cross, one with stage one. It would be a small box culvert for that. But there would be a major bridge for stage two, and that was part of the reason for segmenting the project too, because of a major bridge required over the South Fork Watonwan River south of Long Lake Park. Page four, basically at the bottom, shows a typical cross section of the proposed trail, 10-foot wide, bituminous surface trail. Page 4 shows St. James Creek, the one water course we would have to cross in Stage 1 where the existing railroad culvert or trestle had been removed. And we believe a box culvert would suffice there. It's just an example on the bottom of that page. On page 6 shows the other major water course. That's the top slide is the Highway 4 bridge over the South Fork Watonwan River. So we're looking at a grade separated crossing for that, and the picture at the bottom is just an example. Yeah, that'd be a wish list type of bridge, but nonetheless it could be built. And then page 7 shows the breakdown of the cost estimate for both stages of the project. We're looking at about $1.15 million for the total project cost. Right now, the unfunded land acquisition, estimating $1,500 an acre, which is somewhat of a reasonable estimate, although it could creep much higher. We're looking at about $150,000 for the land acquisition. And so that would leave about $1 million for the construction, or $950,000 if you subtract the engineering and design. So that's a brief synopsis of the proposed Watline Trail.
Thank you. And this is a 4 mile long trail?
Well, stage one and stage two would be 9 miles.
9 miles.
Correct.
Well, I was going to suggest that Representative Torkelson and Gunther and I walk it, but now that you've got 9 miles, we're a little much. I don't know that Gunther and Torkelson could keep up with me.
I was going to suggest that you walk stage one, Gunther walk stage two, and I'll be glad to do the whole work.
Hey. Other questions, comments? Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wondered, to the testifiers, I wondered if you could describe the usage on the trails that are in existence.
St. James is, the Republic is, public as you see that.
Identify yourself, please.
Mark Brent, Wabo County Chair. And that trail is, what, 2 years old?
Four.
And every night that you walk, there's people that are walking on it, exercising. A lot of people use it. And this would extend to Long Lake, which is one of our most widely used lakes.
Representative Winkler.
And I'm sorry. I have just two little follow-ups, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative
Green. I was noticing that the town... and I'm sorry, now I don't see it on this map. The town of Ormsby has a population, it looks like, of about 104. And I wondered, does that go on? Like, you know, does the trail continue? Could we imagine that it might be invested in another year to go past Ormsby?
It could. The Martin County engineer has indicated that there is a move afoot to build part of the trail from Ormsby to Sherburn. I believe it's on the same abandoned railroad grade through that area.
Thanks. And my last question actually may be for you, Chair Erdahl. I just wondered, I'm getting the same feeling that I had when we talked about some different arts and history projects, and it's nothing about this project in particular, but just the sense that we're beginning to need to evaluate projects against one another, and I don't feel as though we're qualified to be a grant-making body in this department, so I'm a little nervous about the relationship between these ideas and, for example, what went by us in Representative Keel's bigger, more comprehensive bill. Do you have a statement on that?
These will just all be laid over for possible inclusion, and if we were to include them, they would be in our bill, but if we don't, we will simply pass them on to those who are more experienced in grants in these areas.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Just quickly, I wonder if you could... tell us what the sources of funds were for the St. James Trail, Butterfield Lake Trail, and the Hammond Highway Trail, since there weren't legacy funds available at that time.
Mr.
The St. James Trail and the Butterfield Lake Trail were transportation enhancement funds provided through the Area Transportation Partnership. I can't speak to the Hammond Highway Trail for sure because that was before my time in the saddle at Watonwan County, but I think it might have been the same funding source, enhancement funds through the Area Transportation Partnership.
Representative Winkler?
Is that a state fund or is that a regional county fund or what is that?
It's a federal fund.
A federal fund?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I just, one final question. Kansas Lake Park seems kind of a brown, dirty lake. Is this anywhere near Representative Torkelson's farm?
Mr. Chair, there are no lakes close to my farm. And if you would like to go fishing on Kansas Lake sometime, I'd be glad to demonstrate the water clarity to you.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much. This will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
And now, Representative Lilly and Darvin Akers. Actually, I'm very disappointed that Representative Atkins isn't here presenting this bill. I don't know why he couldn't have come back from Florida today. For those that don't understand me, I'm not being serious about that.
Some people, Mr. Chair and members, my thoughts.
Welcome.
My thoughts are with you on Representative Atkins and his choosing to be at a conference in Florida, but. My question is,
well,
Judge.
You could have been here enjoying this fine spring weather.
Right.
Proceed, please.
Does someone possibly move consideration?
Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 658 for possible inclusion.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 658 is the Darvin Akers Nature Center project in Dakota County, and it's using some of the language you heard earlier, it's one of those gems or jewels, not quite as great as LaSalle perhaps, or certainly not in the category of Green Lake, but I was listening, so I'm trying to get some points with the chair. But it's nonetheless, it's a treasure here in the metro area. And we have fox and deer and wild turkey there. But with me, I have Vance Granis, who is also bringing up Representative Atkins. He's Mr. Granis is a former mayor of Inver Grove Heights, and Representative Atkins was a mayor. But he says he was a much better mayor, which I'm sure is true. So. Like to yield to Mr. Granis.
Mr. Granis, identify yourself, please.
I will. Thank you, Representative Billy, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Vance Granis, Jr., and I live on a small part of the 250 acres that is being considered in this bill. If we hadn't already identified in the bill, and in talking about it, that it was in Dakota County in the metro area. If you look at these pictures that are in this booklet that I'm going to pass around to you, you might think I was up next to the Itasca property. For a number of years, I've been working with the Dakota County Farmland and Natural Areas Program to find a way to acquire and preserve and protect this 250 acres. Why should this area be protected? It has a chain of incredibly pristine lakes surrounded by woods and grasslands. The main lake is over 50 feet deep, spring-fed, and rated the cleanest lake in the region by the MPCA. It is easier to protect and preserve this area now than to come in later to try and restore it after it is degraded by development like so many other lakes in the metro area. As Senator Jim Metzen has said so many times, God isn't making any more land, so we must protect what we have before it is gone. The 250 acres is a unique place that offers tremendous opportunities to increase people's awareness, understanding, and appreciation of our natural world. Over the last 50 years, my neighbors and I have worked hard to protect and preserve these 250 acres we consider to be an ecological treasure. Some may ask why, if we are doing such a good job of protecting this land, is House File 658 needed? Simply put, we are getting older, and when we are gone, the land not only would not be protected, but would be forced into development to pay taxes. Why should you support the Darvan Acres Nature Center, which is the second part of the bill? It will be much more than the traditional nature center. The interpretive educational building will be built with the very latest green technology. As I'm sure you're aware, the number of persons involved in outdoor activities such as camping, hunting, fishing has been steadily declining. Darvan Acres Nature Center will have a multitude of outdoor skills courses to teach an appreciation for nature for all ages, youth to seniors, in a convenient metropolitan location. Exposure to the natural environment, hunting, archery, camping, and fishing at the Nature Center will increase the number of environmental stewards who will go forth to use those skills in our state and national parks. Although hunting is not allowed in the city, gun safety classes will be taught in an indoor shooting range. This conveniently located facility will allow thousands more to attend who do not have the time or money to travel outstate to attend similar outdoor courses. That is why many members of the hunting and fishing organizations and representatives of the DNR are supporting this proposal. Representatives of Dakota County, the City of Invergrove Heights School District number 199, and Inver Hills Community College also support this Nature Center project. Unfortunately, other than the county, no one else has pledged any financial support. The plan is that the Dakota County Natural Area Program will use the funds it receives to acquire a conservation easement on the 250 acres. Then the nonprofit Nature Center Corporation will acquire the fee title to the land and operate the Nature Center. I want to thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer questions. And I have with me here today a couple gentlemen that have been helping with this, Don McMillan from the Outdoor Heritage Council, and Al Singer from Dakota County's Farmland and Natural Areas Program, if you have any questions of either of them about this.
Questions? You look like you have the urge, Representative Winkler.
I have a question for Representative Lilly. This morning in committee, you said that you didn't like going to Minneapolis because they ate sushi there. That was too far away for you from North St. Paul. And I guess I don't think you represent any of Dakota County, but I guess maybe you think you'll go down to Darvan Acres Nature Center. That's why you're sponsoring this bill.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler and other members, I would prefer not to go south as well. But our former governor kind of forced me to go down there and play hockey, so I get down there a little bit. But it's safe. I was surprised.
Okay. Representative McFarland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly, do we know how much they're asking for in each of these sections, the appropriation?
Mr. Garnes.
If I might respond, Mr. Chairman, the county has had the property appraised. I have no knowledge of the appraisal because data privacy requires them to keep that secret or at least private at this point until they acquire the land. Maybe Mr. Singer could answer more about that, but it's my understanding that the property would be acquired at the appraised value for the conservation easement, and then we're hoping that there will be some donations also as to the fee.
Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I, like you, I'm a little uncomfortable because there are two blank spots in the bill, and I mean, there's certainly more things that, and I'm a little uncomfortable having served on your committee last year with 1.9 and beyond, and just trying to figure out some of that. So as it goes forward, hopefully in the next committee or whatnot, those answers can be brought forward. But I don't think we're close. We're getting close. I think they're in negotiation, and he happens to be, I think, the property owner as well, so I don't think he can know the numbers, and okay. And I'm sorry I don't have the answers, but there's a couple questions I have, and I don't think we're quite there, but we're close.
Well, thank you. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chairman. So am I understanding this correctly, that after the grant is made to Representative Lilly, after the grant is made to from the commissioner to Dakota County, that Dakota County is going to be responsible for all expenses of maintaining and operating this land?
Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dill, I don't know if any of the PILT is available. But no. No, I believe Dakota County will be responsible. Yes, sir. Dakota County will be responsible.
Right. Anything else?
You know, Ms. Chairman, I'm new to the committee. I'm just wondering about acquiring what appears to me to be park land with cultural heritage money and arts money. Again, I admit my naivety to this committee, but I'm wondering about that. And would at least paragraph A would be more appropriately suited maybe in the Lessard section of the bill. I'm just asking the chairman what his thoughts are about this.
Well, Representative Dill, this will be laid over for possible inclusion, and we will determine to which of our categories it should be sent for consideration. Or, you know, to Lessard Sam's as well.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, is it normal practice for this committee to take a bill and make a division of the bill between the funds without having that go before a committee? In other words, really making two bills out of it, one A, Bill A, and the second Bill B. Is that normally how, I've never served on this committee, so that's my question.
Well, it's Representative Dill, it's not something that we have done this year. I don't know if Representative Murphy remembers ever doing that last biennium. She shakes her head no.
Okay.
So it would be fertile ground.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dill, I'm not aware of, and that's kind of what I was trying to allude to. There's, you know, from lines 1.9 on, it seems like there's should be a separate bill or effort or something. My apologies, but
well, Representative Lilly, there are, you know, there's a road that this bill needs to travel yet, and you know, there can be changes made to it as it goes along. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
I repeat that this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. And now, House File 816, Representative Slocum flies in with the National Guard Museum.
No, I didn't. My ears are so bad. Sometimes I don't catch.
Welcome, Representative Slocum. Would you welcome to the committee, and we will Representative Cornish, would you move House File 816?
Mr. Chair, I would glad to move House File 816 for consideration.
To be laid over.
To be laid over.
Thank you.
Representative Slocum, proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cornish. This is a, I want you to remember the last time you've been out at Fort Snelling. You maybe toured the fort. You maybe you watched some of the reenactments that they do of history in the making. You looked at the old buildings. If you went across the highway, the fort is on one end. If you went across the highway to the upper bluffs, that's what we're going to be proposing, the project I'm proposing today, where it would exist. And the upper bluffs, if you drive by on the freeway, and it's at kind of the junction of about four different freeways, the upper bluffs look like buildings that are falling down. And we use sentence to serve members to shore up these buildings for future historic preservation when the times are better economically. The other cool thing about the upper bluffs is right next door to the airport. So the runway is right next door. That's why this location is so great. And what we are proposing in House File 816 is a Minnesota Air National Guard Museum. And this is something that's been in the works for a number of years. It's been talked about, lots of conversations. And we're at a point where we need to really move forward and go ahead. And that's what we're asking for, is some go ahead from the legislature. The Minnesota Air National Guard Historical Foundation wants to develop a campus-style educational and recreational complex that on the upper bluffs, because of its area right by the airport runways, and because of its significance to history and the upper bluffs itself. The project is succeeding. When it's built, it will result in a revitalization of the upper bluffs of Fort Snelling. There's already a really interesting, I haven't gotten a tour yet, Boy Scout camp that they've redone one of the old buildings from the fort and turned it into a Boy Scout camp that looks pretty interesting. This is the Minnesota Air National Guard Museum is an additional area here. The Air National Guard has acquired the approval from the National Park Service, the Governor's Office, the DNR, Hennepin County, and the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board to move forward. They want to get all Minnesotans, especially students, because this is really something that the students in the metropolitan area and really statewide will be able to benefit from. I'm excited about the incredible life-changing opportunities available to those with a good grasp of science, technology, engineering, and math. And this dovetails nicely with the STEM initiatives in education to engage our kids in more science, technology, engineering, and math. It also, the Air National Guard want to bring to the state a Challenger Center for Space Science Education, which would also be a gem for our area and would be a statewide valuable resource for our kids and for the adults that want to tour. You remember what it was like to tour Fort Snelling. This would be on a different scale because it would be about flight history. And I have two testifiers to tell you about a little more about the program. With your name and
title. Welcome.
I'm Richard Wiesner. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Minnesota Air National Guard Historical Foundation, Incorporated. We're currently located on the Air Guard base at Minneapolis Airport. And what we need help with is to move off of the Air Guard base, the secured base, which has not been accessible to the public since 9/11. We need some help to move off of that base and onto the underutilized Fort Snelling Upper Bluff property. Our collection, our museum collection and historic aviation collection includes an airplane 100 years old. It flew in 1911. Very rare. You probably know that at one time we had a Blackbird there. The Air Force Museum in Dayton, Ohio decided we didn't weren't able to exhibit it properly, so they took it away from us. But we do have in our 100-year-old collection some very rare aviation artifacts and materials. In fact, Minnesota is has a historical a record of aviation history that's comparable to no other state in the Union. Most people in Minnesota know that Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic and he came out of Minnesota, but few people know that the first airplane ever built without a tail, the first flying wing airplane, was built here in Minnesota in 1936, and it's hanging on the university campus. Our collection has not been accessible to the public, and we need to get it out there where it can be accessible to the public. So that's what we need some help doing.
My name is Richard Sunby. I'm employed by the Minnesota Air Guard Museum.
Well,
and since 9/11, the Air Force took over the Air Guard base, and our collection of 100-year-old artifacts and aircraft. We have 24 aircraft, vintage aircraft, dating from the early years of the Air Guard, and as Dick mentioned, as far back as 1911, which was just a few years before he was born. Dick was a fighter pilot during World War II, and he survived 80 combat missions working in France, Germany, and Italy, and so he's been around airplanes quite a bit. He was also the operations manager at Pullman Air Force Base in St. Paul, or Pullman Airport in St. Paul, where he was in charge of the operations for the Air Guard at that time. So he's been in and around airplanes all of his life. What we're looking for is some help. We have some short-term needs and some long-term needs. Short-term, we have well over 100,000 feet of 8mm and 35mm film. We have BCR film that goes back 25 to 30 years. And we need to digitize that and preserve that for the benefit of the state. We need some storage space. Since 9/11, we've been thrown out of the historic Cold War building that we're presently housed in, which is a historical building in itself. We would like to preserve that building. We'd like to preserve all these artifacts. We need some storage space, climate controlled. We need to hire some staff to complete our inventory up to the American Association of Museum Standards. There's actually only two museums in the state of Minnesota that are fully accredited by the American Association of Museums, and that is our goal. We would be working and affiliated with the Museum of Science and the Minnesota Historical Society to fulfill these goals. So that's kind of what we're looking for, is the funds to help us move forward, move off the base. We've already been approved to acquire 26 acres of land on the Upper Bluff. This is a major undertaking. Dick has been working on this for almost 10 years now, and we just got approval last fall by the National Park Service. So now that we've got that done, we need some funds to move forward. Thank you.
How many airplanes do you have?
24.
And the land that you propose to move on, who owns that?
Actually, it's right along runway 30 right, which is one of the busiest runways in the country. It's actually the first hole of the Fort Snelling Golf Course, which is a golf course that the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board would like to see us take over, because they're losing a fair amount of money on it each year. And so if we can turn this around, it would be a benefit to the Park and Rec Board, and it would, of course, be a benefit for the whole Upper Bluff area and the state.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you. I'm not against the project, but I do have some questions. Who actually does own the land then? My understanding is this is land that's leased by Hennepin County. Is that true?
Who owns it?
Yeah.
The DNR has the title to the land at the present time. It was turned over to the DNR from the National Park Service about 40 years ago. It's been laying there idle most of the time since then. This plan is the first plan that has appeared to be of have any appetite by the National Park Service, the DNR. Hennepin County has approved it, and like Dick Sunby said, the Park and Rec Board, Minneapolis Park and Rec Board, would like to divest themselves of that golf course. They want to keep the ballpark area where the light standards are, but they'd like to get rid of the golf course. There are five other golf courses, I think there are actually seven, within a few miles of the airport, so they that flat golf course is not used very much. It's way underutilized and not a very valuable asset for the public.
Mr. Chair, so is the golf course currently being leased by Hennepin County?
No, it doesn't get used by Hennepin County.
Leased.
It's leased to the Park and Rec Board by from the DNR.
From the okay. DNR.
Property is owned by the DNR, leased to the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board, who operates okay. all the Minneapolis golf course.
Okay. And just one other comment. I know about the Air Guard, the museum, because I happen to serve on the Starbase Minnesota Board of Directors.
Good.
And so I hope that with the challenge thing that we're not competing against what the Department of Defense is already paying for.
Absolutely not.
That the state of Minnesota is not. So I just wanted to bring that forward.
Kim Van Vliet recognizes that her the Starbase program serves kids up to about the fifth grade, sometimes into the sixth grade. Our program would pick up from there and move forward, and we'd be very complimentary.
Okay. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl, and Representative Slocum, and to the testifiers. I heard you say that MAC had also approved this or endorses this project. The FAA and the Minnesota Department of Aeronautics has a very complicated scheme of managing airspace around airports. It's recently been amended to include what are called departure zones, and I'm wondering, has this site been evaluated by the Minnesota Office of Aeronautics and FAA, and they have given their blessing to this site as a new establishment in the proximity of the airport?
Mr. Sunsby.
We have been working with Denny Probst of MAC, and he has come out and viewed the site, and he thinks that there is absolutely no problem why we couldn't go ahead and move forward with the project. We actually will not be having any flying aircraft. They're all static displays. We do want to come up with a plan to put a taxiway in between the Air Guard base and the proposed location for the new museum so that visiting aircraft would be able to come in, land, and be displayed and exhibited on a temporary basis. But basically, the planes would be pretty much static except for those visiting aircraft.
President Dill.
Thank you again, Chair Erdahl. My question was more about the FAA and the Minnesota Department of Aeronautics. I know the MAC board is very knowledgeable, but I would suggest that you find out directly from them if that site is acceptable. The other sites that are around the airport, as an example, off of the end of runway 30, there used to be a Detroit Diesel Allison by the Mall of America, and the price tag on that was north of $30 million to remove it. And anytime there are any new buildings, you said that this was very close to runway 30.
Yes.
And I'm for the project. I just am cautioning you that this could be an issue. And so I would suggest that you take an additional or consult with MAC to make sure they've done it.
Okay.
So we've been in touch with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. As a matter of fact, up until December, the chairman of our board of directors was John Kaler from Rochester, who had formerly been a member of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So we're fully aware of what their issues are, and they have been over and visited with us.
Representative Dill?
I again encourage you to contact the FAA directly in the Minnesota Office of Aeronautics.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Cornish renews his motion that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now, House File 985, Representative Hackbarth, and we still have several minutes, items left, and about 27 minutes, so we need to move right along here, guys. Representative Hackbarth, welcome to the committee. Representative Keel, would you make the motion?
I will move this motion for possible, is it possible inclusion?
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. Some of the members may recognize this bill as a bill that I've had in the bonding committee a number of different times. I've been trying to pursue this for a number of years, and I would invite folks to come out to the Kelly Farm sometime and look at the farm and see what it's all about. I think everybody that's been out there, once they realize what's really there, realize what a jewel it is. With me today, I do have a director.
Well, I take director, okay. But actually site manager.
Site manager, Mr. Bob Quist.
Yes.
And he's going to tell you a little bit about the project and why we brought this here today.
Mr. Quist.
Thank you. I will be brief, since, as Representative Hackbarth has mentioned, this has been around for a couple of years.
Start out by saying who you are, please, in your position.
I will do that. I'm Bob Quist, Quist. Site manager at Oliver Kelly Farm. The Kelly Farm is part of the Minnesota Historical Society. It is one of our historic sites. It is, and this bill really addresses the ongoing changing mission of the Kelly Farm. Kelly Farm is located in Elk River, within 45 minutes of over half of the state's population. It's on the Mississippi River. It is a 189-acre farm, which is also a state historic site and a national historic landmark. It's the original farmstead of Oliver H. Kelly and his family, and today it's preserved and interpreted as part of not only Minnesota's history, but it interprets Oliver Kelly's farming and organizing activities. In addition to farming and writing an awful lot of letters supporting and promoting Minnesota, Oliver Kelly somehow found time to found six agricultural organizations in the early 1850s and 60s. Three of those most enduring ones that are with us today were the Territorial Agricultural Society, which became the Minnesota State Agricultural Society, which still has a little fair every year over in Falcon Heights. Another organization was the Minnesota Fruit Growers Association, which is became the Minnesota State Horticultural Society. And the largest organization that he had a hand in founding was the Grange, the National Grange, which at one time had one out of every three farmers in America as a member. Today is still an active organization around the country. Today, the Kelly Farm has become Minnesota's family farm. It is a place for families to come and explore not only their agricultural history, but also try to get connected to modern agriculture. And that is what poses a problem for us, where we have over 30,000 visitors trying to learn something about modern agriculture in a very, very good restored 1860s farmstead. Imagination is heavily used. The visitors... currently, we struggle because of that 30,000 visitors, half of them are school students, and today is an excellent example. Luckily, today we had no groups scheduled to visit us, but we do see school groups throughout the year. In our current facilities, our visitor center just doesn't have the amenities to be able to meet the needs of our current audiences. This bill would provide funding for the revitalization of the Kelly Farm, and it would make a much more usable historic farmstead. We would add some of the unique features to this property, including the first irrigation system used in Minnesota, and it would primarily give us an enhanced visitor center. And this would make possible a very large expansion into contemporary agricultural education on the property. We'd also be able to continue to develop distance learning technologies, in essence moving Kelly Farm and agriculture
into the state's classrooms. The 30-year-old visitor center doesn't have the restrooms, doesn't have the meeting spaces, doesn't have the support systems that we need. A new visitor center would not only give us that, but also additional programming spaces. A teaching kitchen, a teaching greenhouse, classrooms, expanded exhibition space, to better tell that story of where agriculture is today. Also, we would create new cropping areas outside on the ground. We do have 189 acres, and this bill is not adding any new land. It's just making more use of the land we have. New cropping acreage that would allow us to compare past cropping and crops to modern crops, and also the capability of using modern livestock without actually having to own them. We have ag partners that are more than willing to bring us things and then take them away. Our goal is to grow our audience base to over 45,000 a year. To get to where we are in this project is very much an audience-based piece. We held a series of meetings over 4 years around the state, meeting with educators, tourism officials, but mostly we met with agricultural interests. And we met with agricultural interests across the entire spectrum of agriculture. We were greatly assisted by former Commissioner of Agriculture Gene Hugesson, and we asked agriculturalists what was important, what was the issue, what are the issues in Minnesota today? And it didn't matter what their farming or agricultural activity was, they all stated, we need people to know more about agriculture in Minnesota. We need better informed citizens knowing about where their food comes from. They need to know more about what farming means to Minnesota. Agriculture is the second largest industry in the state. Its impact is huge. It is, in some senses, the industry that made Minnesota, and it has had dramatic impact over time and still does today. This project will allow us to continue telling the story of the changing issues in agriculture in a quick fashion, partnering, not developing everything ourselves, but partnering with other entities to get the content out there. The public wants to know about agriculture. They want to know where their food comes from. And so the Minnesota Historical Society, which is in the business of telling Minnesota stories, is the entity to do it. We have the experience, the expertise, and as we found in these listening sessions, we have the reputation to be able to present information. We don't have an oar in this water here because we're not agriculturalists. We tell the story. And that's what the goal with this is today, is to be able to get to that point. So with the new facilities, we can tell a little bit more about farming in the past, which we've done an excellent job farming currently, and then start previewing farming stories of the future. Our educational themes that we've come out of this program of 4 years of revitalization, our themes are farming, farm organizations, food, environment and agriculture, agriculture industry, and the Kelly family. These programs will give us an opportunity to show the innovation that is part of Minnesota's history and part of our current agriculture today. I think that's all I want to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You. We'll stand for any questions that you might have.
Okay, first, I'd like to add that when I was teaching, I brought several classes to the Kelly Farm and enjoyed the experience there. I've been there several times. Questions, comments? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to add that Mr. Quist was on a trip down to Iowa, and he came all the way back just for our presentation today, and he has to return back down there, so he's here just for this. So
you
thank
have
you very
to go
much
back
for
your to Iowa.
I thank you, committee members and chair, for being here.
How were the roads?
The roads were wet, very very wet. But you know, I dodged tornadoes, I dodged hail. But we'll see what it's like tomorrow morning when I go back. I'm going down to purchase a team of horses for the Kelly Farm.
Okay, good. Representative Murphy, quickly.
One question, Representative Heckler. Do you have this in a bill in the present bonding bill or the one that's coming up?
I have a bill in the Capital Investment Committee, but it's not in any omnibus bill.
Not in the bill, but... Yeah.
I put it in both places.
Thank you.
Thank you.
House File 1255, Representative McElpatrick. Welcome to the committee, Representative McElpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We got, as I told you, about 5 minutes we've got here, so appreciate
your... I think we can do it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I am very happy to be here to speak on behalf of an exceptional facility in Grand Rapids. The Children's Discovery Museum has been in existence now for 16 years, and during that time they have continued to grow and expand their program. And it has become an outstanding facility in our city and serving a wide area. I have John Kelsch with me today, who's the director of the museum, and he's going to explain the proposal to you.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is John Kelsch, K-E-L-S-C-H. Thank you, Chairman Erdahl, committee members. I need to emphasize the broad nature of our outreach. We serve 10 counties. Aiken, Beltrami, Cass, Carlton, Crow Wing, Clearwater, Hubbard, Itasca, Coochaching, St. Louis. We have 10,000 square miles to outreach to. Kids come to our museum from 120 miles away. We bus them in. We've enrolled 40,000 children in the last 10 years, preschool up to fifth grade. They learn about a sense of place in our natural environment. They stand on an oversized map of North America and learn the power of an earthquake through our mechanized earthquake table. They navigate wing dams like on the Mississippi River, play with locks, learn about turbine power. How would the money be used? We would expand our exhibits. They're getting a little old now, 6, 7 years old. We want to take down economic barriers. 50% of the kids that live in our area are on the school lunch program. They never get to St. Paul or Minneapolis to see the Science Center from Black Duck. We want to give them scholarships, make the admission free, provide transportation assistance to the schools, which is even more important now with the high price of fuel. We want to develop new exhibits, provide free household memberships for disadvantaged families so they can come all year long and not pay the $8 per person. We're one of the only children's museums located in a town under 100,000 people in a rural area. And when they asked 50 Nobel Prize winners what was their greatest childhood influence, most said having stimulating experiences at a museum led them to ask questions and solve problems. Kids in Minnesota don't have these enrichment opportunities found here in the metro area. For nearly 20 years, we've been the leading attraction up there in northern Minnesota. 80% of the cost of our facility was funded by individuals. We did get some state money, capital, for our building. But for 15, 16 years now, we've operated. Generally, the general overhead does not come from government funding. It's all privately funded. We don't receive state, county, or city money for our general operating budgets. We have the data. Teachers have been providing written surveys for 10 years. 95% of them say their class learning experience at the museum could not have been held in the classroom. They say our exhibits are age appropriate and engaging, among other things. So we have the land that was donated. We have the bricks and mortar. It's paid for. We have no debt on our building. The exhibits are in place. They're paid for. Now we just need to get more kids there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kelch. Questions? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much do you anticipate requesting, and how would the funds be broken down for your use?
We're requesting $395,000 over a 2-year period, similar to what the Duluth Children's Museum and the Minnesota Children's Museum received 2 years ago. They each received $495,000 over 2 years. For some reason, our museum was forgotten. There are three children's museums in Minnesota.
Actually,
we would break down that spending
Rochester.
Four different ways.
Mankato. There's another one in Mankato you're missing. So there are four, because I think I've heard from them all now.
Has it opened up yet?
I'm still waiting for another one, but I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, have they opened their doors yet down there?
In Mankato.
I think they have.
Okay. We'd break that down 25% for new exhibits, 25% for scholarship aid, 25% for transportation assistance, and other monies for curriculum development.
One quick one, Representative Murphy.
Do you anticipate that you're going to make your new exhibits movable? So maybe you could exchange your exhibit with the other three, and they could exchange their exhibits with you?
Yes, we have done that in the past. In fact, we purchased a used exhibit once from the Minnesota Children's Museum at a reduced rate. We're a small museum that can't afford the high cost of these traveling exhibits like major cities, unfortunately. Sometimes they want $30,000 for, 3 months.
Thank you, Mr. Kelch, Representative Ecclefactor.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, committee members.
Let's see, who did the Representative Keel, would you renew your motion, please?
I would renew my motion for this museum to be House File 1255 to be included in possible layover. Whatever.
Pretty close.
Pretty close. I knew that wasn't right.
The words were there.
I was worried.
The words were all there. You just got to get the order right.
Right. Yeah.
For possible inclusion.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman and representatives.
Ms. Winter.
Thank you.
Representative Green, will you move what date? The 22nd?
I move the minutes from the 22nd.
Thank you. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Ms. Winter, identify yourself, please.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Lucinda Winter. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Film and TV Board, and I know I've spoken before the group before. I apologize, I don't have any leave-behinds. I wasn't planning on testifying today, but happy to do so. I'm here very simply to make a request on behalf of the Minnesota Film and TV Board and the filmmakers in Minnesota for a legacy fund appropriation. It would be used to establish the Minnesota Filmmakers Grant Program. This would be we haven't worked out program details. We would put together a committee of people from the community to help us, but in summary, or the log line as we say in film land, would be that this would be a grant program provided to people who are residents of Minnesota for projects that, and of course shot in Minnesota, produced and post-produced in Minnesota, that would illuminate, I guess is a good word, either something historically significant, whether true or fictionalized, or in some way our heritage here in Minnesota. So I guess the good way to say it is Minnesota stories. We have made a formal request to Dean Erdahl, Chair Erdahl, for this grant program. This would be new for us, and it would be really a way for us to support Minnesota filmmakers who can prove that they have the skills necessary to make this happen, and of course carefully document their work and report out on outcomes. But we would like to be able to offer this to people who, because we really feel that this is a very valid and in fact growing way for people to tell their stories. More and more people have access to the tools to tell their stories on film and video and digital media. And we'd like to be able to support that. There are two similar programs in the United States, one offered through New Mexico and one in Louisiana, and they are directly focused on indigenous homegrown production and supporting that. So we'd look at those programs just to see how they do it and see what makes sense for us.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Ms. Winter. Anna Marie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. I know you are strapped for time, so we're going to do the best we can. I learned a lot today. You guys covered a lot of ground, a lot of different topics. I am the public policy liaison for ArborJet and the Urban Forest Conservancy, and I'm here to talk to you a little bit about emerald ash borer today, a little green bug that I never thought I would know so much about and never wished I didn't know so much about. But here we are in Minnesota, and we have a horrible invasive pest that has come to our state that we are in the throes of trying to deal with. I've had the good fortune to work with municipalities, counties, academic researchers, foresters, arborists for the last couple years and really learn my way around this as best I can. And it's a little more discouraging with every single one of those meetings, to be honest with you. But in the last year or so, there's been some light at the end of the tunnel. We've been able to see that there are some things out there that can actually help protect and preserve some of these trees and bring us from a place of wholesale cutting and replacing, which is really where we were at just a few short years ago with USDA and APHIS. So I wanted to just cover a few broad points before some fine folks from the municipalities could just give you a couple minutes to talk about the front lines of this. But the three big areas are sort of velocity, volume, and value. And by velocity, I mean that EAB is sort of like the invasive pest version of a wildfire. It's moving faster than pretty much anything that we've ever seen move into a localized area. So USDA and APHIS have actually categorized this as a natural disaster. A quarantine in place, much like we've started here in Minnesota in different areas, as you've heard about it, was just actually lifted in Pennsylvania this week. And that's not because they don't have EAB anymore. It was because it's everywhere. And so it makes no difference to be moving wood between counties anymore because the bug has completely infested the entire state and its ash population. The reason I wanted to explain velocity to you is to understand that we are 2 years into this, and from healthy tree to dead standing tree is 5 years. So we had good intentions in planning processes that we're looking at 20-year programs to remove and replace trees, but we simply don't have 20 years, and dead standing trees are a liability for communities, for schools, for parks. I mean, we're going to lose millions regardless. But something needs to be done, certainly in populated areas, that will help mitigate against those issues. EAB was supposed to be in Minnesota in 2026. It's here now, so that tells you how fast it is moving compared to what we assumed earlier. We used to be number two in terms of volume in the country, ash population. We are now number one. We have over 900 million ash trees in the state of Minnesota. That is because 30 million have already died in Michigan, and we bumped them out of the top spot. That will be happening here very, very soon. We have 7 to 10-fold the number of ash in the state as we had elm trees when Dutch elm was first ravaging its way through our state, if that gives you an idea of comparison to what we're dealing with in terms of overall tree loss. And I think we all can remember how devastating Dutch elm disease was. City forestry resources are at a third of what they were during the height of Dutch elm disease. So we are in a very difficult spot to try to deal with this. And the mortality rate, this is a pest and not a disease, so understand the difference a little bit. The disease was spreading from root system to root system with Dutch elm disease. It was carried by a bug to initially infest it. But with EAB, we have a bug that we can kill. So we don't really need to kill the tree. So it's a little bit of a different scenario. I can point you to about a dozen different resources that will explain the value of trees, but I don't think anyone that sits in this particular group needs too much of a lesson on the value of trees and the value of natural resources to the state of Minnesota. I purposely did not bring printed materials today because I wanted to save some trees, but you'll all be getting an electronic kit that has information and academic research in it for you and the latest on what's happening with EAB from the Department of Ag and DNR's resources and the University of Minnesota when you get back to your email boxes. The problem with massive tree loss like this, particularly in populated areas or parks or campgrounds or golf courses or schools, businesses for that matter, is that we're facing a significant reduction in property value. in a really horrible economic time when property values already are stinky. Increased heating and cooling costs, significantly increased water consumption, increased stormwater runoff, and with clear impacts for water clarity. And livability and usability of these areas, neighborhoods, parks. Again, people go to these places because they're wonderful places to be. They're tree-lined. They're places that people want to spend time. And then the natural habitats, of course, that we'll be losing when these trees fall. I don't even want to really go into wood waste disposal, but I don't think anybody in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or anywhere else knows what we would do with all the wood waste when these trees need to come down in short order because they're already at capacity. Taxpayer needs to be considered in this issue. For every single tree we cut down, 20 can be protected and saved through academically supported research that shows the efficacy of treatment and prolonging the life span to its original goal for a tree. So I would suggest that anything else that came in front of you that you could say would be a 20-fold savings in cost wouldn't even be a consideration. But this one is one that's been, you know, tough to get the word around and get people to understand that the fiscal implications of this bug are astronomical. It will bankrupt cities. There was a piece that got distributed to many of you the first week of session from MnSTAC. I think DNR was distributing it too. It was really nicely done, like a four-pager color. Actually, it's in the email material I gave to you. Couldn't have written it better myself. The two bullets on the back in terms of legislative requests were to provide funding to municipalities to deal with EAB. I ask that you revisit that, look at the endorsements that are on that brochure from MnSTAC. And then finally, I'm a lifelong Minnesotan. I own property here. I'm raising my three children here. I didn't know an ash tree from a you know, box elder tree in my backyard. I do now. But I just want trees. And I think most Minnesotans are in that camp. And when we lost Dutch Elm, when Dutch Elm came and we lost those trees on my family farm, my dad replanted 500 trees in a grove that I had to weed and water for 3 years as slave labor as a teenager. And I asked him the other day what was going to happen to that 100, the row, third row in of ash trees. And he said, well, you work pretty damn hard on those trees. I think I'm going to try to keep them. So I hope that the legislature, I don't care if it's this committee chairman or somewhere else, realizes quickly the situation we're in and can do something this legislative session to support municipalities and counties in their efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. Will you, your testifier is going to say anything?
I have just some quick things to go over. My name is Chris Link.
We actually won't have hardly any time, but just want to take about 30 seconds, that's fine.
Okay, my name's Chris Link. I work for the City of Richfield Public Works, Streets and Forestry. We implemented a treatment program recently. We looked at four options, basically do nothing, remove, replace, treat all the trees, or a hybrid of all three of those things. If you want to attach numbers to that, and Richfield is a small town, roughly 7 square miles. We have 3,254 ash trees. If we were going to do nothing and just let the pest come through, we're looking at $1 to $2 million for removal. If we're going to remove or replace, we're looking at $2 to $3 million. If we're going to treat all of them, we're looking at $100,000 to $200,000. That gets the numbers down to where they're kind of manageable. With a hybrid approach, where we instead of looking at removal as a means to take care of the problem, look at it as a tool. If we can remove trees that are less desirable, if there's damage, if they're leaning, if there's other things wrong with them, remove those trees, replace those trees with new trees, and treat the more desirable trees. That's the approach we're looking at, and it seems to be working for us.
Thank you.
Sandy?
Mr. Chair, committee, thank you very much. I'm here representing the City of New Brighton and the Parks and Recreation Director. We too.
Your name is?
Sandy Brewer.
Okay.
City of New Brighton.
We also chose this year to start a treatment program for our trees as well as a small removal program. We have almost 1,000 green ash trees in New Brighton. We did the cost calculations as well. To remove all the trees would have cost between three quarters of a million dollars to $1 million. And this year we did our first round of treatment. We treated every boulevard tree in the city with the exception of 188 trees that will eventually be removed due to the desired level of the tree. It's in its dying phase. It's an R1, R2. It's the forestry term. Needs to come out, needs to be removed. We also treated 156 park trees. We hope to continue that. But we are having difficulty with funding resources and how we're going to continue this. Breakdown for us was a dollar amount, and City Council recognizing that it was much cheaper and cost-effective for us to treat trees, knowing that we could treat trees actually for the next 43 years versus a one-time removal of those trees. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And you know, I'm sure we'll be talking about invasive species in various levels more later. And at some point, the state, I think, has to get serious about doing something about this. So thank you. Members, I'm going to give you your first assignment, your first homework assignment. In your packet, you have some materials prepared by Mr. Nobles. I actually had hoped to be able to talk a little bit more about it today. But we need to get serious about what we're going to be doing with administrative costs. I ask you to look over those materials and send me an email about your suggestions or what your thoughts are regarding administrative costs. And we'll try to get on that soon. Also, and I don't know if Ms. Beach has sent this out yet or not, but many of you, I think, have been getting requests about Let's Go Fishing. If anybody has some serious thoughts about including Let's Go Fishing in the bill, let me know. Okay? With that, Representative McFarland.
Mr. Chair, are we meeting next week? I know there's a session.
Because of session, we cannot meet next week. So, pushes us a little bit. Actually, at this point, the arts, history, culture portion of the bill, we may not officially be done until after Easter. I planned on everything being done before. The other ones that we're doing together, the 3-in-1 omnibus bill, I think we'll do before, but the other one probably will be after Easter. Right? Well, King, this case is closed.